Let's see. The planet is hot. Droughts, fires, floods. But our economy is cold. Recession, job losses. What if we could make our planet cooler and the economy hotter? We can, if we end our dependence on foreign oil and switch to clean energy. The carbon pollution from oil and coal that's melting the ice caps and warming the planet? Cap it and spur new investment and jobs in clean energy like wind and solar. Investing in clean energy could provide more than 37 million jobs for American workers in the next 20 years. That's right, 37 million jobs. Closing the carbon pollution loophole makes polluters pay and helps clean companies prosper so they can hire more workers. As a result, the planet cools, the economy heats up. Pretty cool. I mean, hot.
Paid for by the Alliance for Climate Protection.
And welcome back to the Green Front, coming to you live today from Nashville, Tennessee, where the Climate Project and Al Gore have called us volunteers back for Climate Training Redux, Part 2, the sequel. We're going to find out what our new marching orders are. Of course, all of us are trying to do what we can to address climate change, and we need some really big thinkers for a really gigantic problem. And I'm going to introduce the author of a book who has done a story about a man, Christopher Swan, who's still around and has a huge mega idea for a sun train that addresses not only our environmental challenges but transportation issues in terms of congestion and, you know, traffic from people commuting from the suburbs, and most importantly, energy and our addiction to oil and what the CO2 is doing to our atmosphere. So without further delay, I want to welcome David Vasquez to the Green Front. He is a San Francisco native. I know I tend to be Bay Area-centric with all my guests, and many of them are people I'm proud to personally know, but that's just where a lot of the eco-innovators seem to come from, the eco-preneurs. And again, one of them is Christopher Swan, and David Vasquez has written about it. David is from San Francisco. He has a background in urban planning, sustainable architecture, health and biological science. Also on the side does some photography and filmmaking. And he also right now, after teaching at many colleges, is currently in the Sustainable Design Program at the University of California, Berkeley, their extension program. Welcome to the Green Front, David Vasquez.
Thank you very much.
Now, this is not your idea, but you communicate Mr. Swan's big idea. What is it?
Mr. Swan's big idea is a giant proposal for a train system. You could think of it as the dream train system, either for the whole state or even the whole country. It's a new paradigm train system. It's not like anything in the world today. It's 100% clean, for one. It operates on 100% solar and wind power, all power generated on or near the tracks. It's not depending on a power plant in the distance at all. But maybe most importantly, it's a full-service railway, something that we haven't seen in this country for at least 50 years. This is a train that does everything. It's not a commuter train. It's not a tourist train. It's not just for one purpose. It's for all purposes. And the overall idea is to basically get us off of automobile dominance, which has been happening for now 50 years or so. Trains used to pretty much dominate, and then cars took over, cars and airplanes. And what we're looking for now is a good mix. There's just way too many cars. It doesn't matter what they run on. Even if they ran 100% clean, there's just way too many of them. And the carbon footprint from the automobile infrastructure is just needs to be reduced by a lot. And so this is the first thing I've ever seen that actually could do that if it came to pass. It's not rocket science. There's no exotic technology. It builds upon existing rail infrastructure. So basically we're taking all the train systems and consolidating them into one. And what that means, instead of building something from scratch, like, for instance, the proposed California high-speed rail, they're building everything from scratch. So you won't see anything, any new service at all for at least 10, probably more like 15 years. This builds from existing rail infrastructure, which means within 2 years we could have major improvements. Within 5 years we could have huge improvements.
And it's really an example of technology serving environment, not colliding with our environment. There's a beautiful picture on the front of this book, which I highly recommend. It just came out. It's a picture of this futuristic-looking train coming off the Golden Gate Bridge on a track that I guess actually would run underneath the deck that the cars travel on. And the key to this whole thing, I guess, as I understand it, is that the solar panels are embedded in the track so that they're exposed to the sun most of the day.
Yeah, there's solar panels on the railroad ties. You could get Now, this is not in all locations. There's really two types of track. One is called solar track, and one is called landscape track. And on the cover of the book, it shows both, actually. There are some track where all you see is vegetation, and you know, with the rails going through the vegetation. But in the places where it's good exposure for solar collecting, you could have each railroad tie would have 3 square feet of photovoltaic panel on it, which if you add up the numbers, over the course of a linear mile of track, that comes out to over 12,000 square feet of photovoltaics. And that's enough. It's not going to power the whole train system, but you could get, we're thinking a quarter to a third of all the power needed by the entire railway system could come just from the tracks. And then at the stations, you'd have some probably solar thermal generating plants on the rooftops of the stations. And then there's a few locations where the train would be going where there's an opportunity to do big, you know, a couple of big wind turbines. Like, for instance, in Northern California, there's several really great wind spots. There's several places where there's big, giant train yards. Like, for instance, east of Sacramento, there's one in Roseville. It's a whole square mile of train yards. So if you decked over that and put solar panels that track the sun, that's a square mile of photovoltaic surface right there. That would power a huge part of the system.
And isn't there a hydrogen fuel cell piece on top of these trains?
No. What happens is you collect the sun energy from the tracks and from trackside little solar farms and the stations, and then all the electricity gets piped to the nearest station, and there they crack water to make hydrogen. So the stations make hydrogen, and then the trains themselves run on hydrogen. The trains have fuel cells, and hydrogen is just a way of storing energy. It's a way of storing electricity, a really good one for storing train electricity.
So would that hydrogen be stored on top of the trains? Is that like a hydrogen tank or what?
There's a hydrogen tank under the floor.
I see.
Yeah, in the book there's a diagram that shows where it is.
So Mr. Swan is not a pie-in-the-sky dreamer. He's a railroad expert and engineer, and someone who's really, from what I understand, has addressed all the
he's an outsider with insider knowledge. He had opportunity to be, he had opportunity to go to Harvard at all expenses paid, personally invited by the head of the Harvard Architecture Graduate School, and he studied with him, but he didn't do it. He basically has stayed on the outside of the railroad industry for 20 years or so, knowing most of the key players, knowing most of the inside information. The idea is if we're going to have an outside-the-box proposal, sometimes it takes an outsider to do that.
Absolutely. And what I love about this is he's really addressed, it sounds like, the key concerns, which would be, first of all, just, the infrastructure. It doesn't have to be reinvented. It just needs to be expanded upon. And with these tracks, with the vegetation being allowed to remain intact, it seems like that would overcome the concern that we've had with this track and train that would run through California going through all these national parks and state parks.
Absolutely. In fact, he proposed back in 1991, he wrote a book back in 1978 called YV88 that proposed a railway system for Yosemite National Park. And then in 1991, some of the people in the park got word of it and really started pushing for it and brought Chris Swan back to propose, that they actually do this because they had a big problem with too many cars. And a national park seemed like a logical place to start something like this because you don't really need a car when you're in a national park if you could just get to all the key spots. And so it really almost happened. The only thing that all the park officials wanted it. The only thing that prevented it from happening was at the last moment there was a buyout from the company that owned Curry Company. It was a very distracting thing, and they had to just abandon the plan. But it's still, we'd still like to bring it back. It was. I can remember that the San Francisco Chronicle had a big front page spread about this whole thing in 1991 about this grand plan to put a great railway service in Yosemite National Park. There was another thing that happened even more recently in the late 90s, 1998. Swan and a group that he put together almost purchased Caltrain, and they were going to take over Caltrain. They found an investor who wanted to do it, and the only thing that prevented that from happening was that there were legal issues, overlapping jurisdictions, and they would have had to they couldn't find who owned title to the system, to the Caltrain system that goes from San Francisco to San Jose. It's about a 45-mile route. So that was the closest call that we've had so far. But each time it got closer and closer. So hoping that this next one's going to be the charm, hopefully.
Now, I wish we had more time, but I just want to, again, repeat the book if we have to close out quickly on the interview, Mr. Swan's Big Idea by David Vasquez. It's a must-read for anyone concerned about addressing a problem. And I know the big concern, the roadblock, typically has been financial, but there's even a plan for addressing that. So I think it's something everyone should consider. Thank you so much for the book, David Vasquez, and for promoting Mr. Swan's Big Idea. We're going to be hearing more about it in the near future, I promise, because I, for one, am going to be talking it up.
Okay, it's on Amazon.com. That's the best place to get it right now.
Amazon.com, the
yep.
Sun Train. You heard it here first. You're listening to Greenfront Radio. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. We'll be back with another problem solver right after these messages.
Let's see. The planet is hot. Droughts, fires, floods. But our economy is cold. Recession, job losses. What if we could make our planet cooler and the economy hotter? We can. If we end our dependence on foreign oil and switch to clean energy. The carbon pollution from oil and coal that's melting the ice caps and warming the planet? Cap it and spur new investment and jobs in clean energy like wind and solar. Investing in clean energy could provide more than 37 million jobs for American workers in the next 20 years. That's right, 37 million jobs. Closing the carbon pollution loophole makes polluters pay and helps clean companies prosper so they can hire more workers. As a result, the planet cools, the economy heats up. Pretty cool. I mean, hot.
Paid for by the Alliance for Climate Protection.